You know, at a conference like this, it's always hard to get there on time. In fact, last week I was at a conference in Washington, and nobody showed up. It was people were walking in the middle of when Louis Palau was speaking. I thought, now that's kind of interesting. But you get involved with people, and so we'll be informal about it this morning. My name's Lauren Libby. I don't know how many, I know probably a lot of you, but for those of you who don't, in case you were wondering who this fellow is, my name is just like on the label. And I've spent my entire life getting mail addressed to Miss Libby. So it tends to make you feel a little insecure at times. But you know how it is. Life's not always quite the way you'd like to have it. The reason my folks named me Lauren, they told me, is that they really wanted to name me Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, after my great-grandfather. But at about the time that I was born, the town drunk's name was Warren. So they thought that probably wouldn't be a good name to hang on a son. And so it was a hybrid name, and that's how they arrived at it. You know, family history is interesting to study, isn't it? It's on why things happen. And what we'll be discussing and working together, and by the way, I'm not going to be lecturing this morning. This is going to be more of a time of personal evaluation, a time that we can work together, that we can share together. And I take it to mean that a workshop, we're going to work. And so it'll be a time of working. I hope that I was hoping that there would be a crowd of about this size, because almost what I'd like us to do is, if you have your spouse with you, or that we get out of this room for the initial time that we're thinking, that we can just reflectively think. Because I'd like to have us take stock of where we are in relationships with people. Have you ever sat down and had a relationship inventory as to where you are and what constitutes relationships and all those little things in a relationship, you know, that are little niggles that you wish you could get straightened out, but they're not, particularly with non-Christians. Or what you can do in relating to people. So we want to spend plenty of time doing that this morning and being able to think through where we are currently with relationships. Because when we talk about evangelism, we're really not talking about so much about what we do with people as to bring them, and it's important to bring them down to a decision point. But it's also important that we have the relational bridge to be able to do that. And so we need to evaluate honestly where we are in relationships. Mostly what I'll be doing is talking some things that have helped me personally. I don't intend this to be a theological session. We're probably not going to do, I can tell you, we're not going to do a Bible study necessarily on evangelism. But we're going to be talking together on how you can really sit down and talk to people about knowing the Lord. And things are changing. I don't know whether they're changing in Texas or not, but at least in Colorado, things are changing. People are changing in their perception. It's not everybody's grounded in such a biblical base here in Colorado. Now, I realize we're probably off the deeper end more than you all are in Texas and Oklahoma or wherever you happen to be from.
You're closer to California.
What's that?
Colorado, closer to California.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I grew up in Kansas and grew up on steak and potatoes, and right in here you're kind of in the hybrid belt. It's kind of, you're right on the edge of guacamole and right on the edge of steak. So it just depends on where you are. Colorado is kind of the mixing pot of the east and west along the Front Range of the Rockies here. So you may be a little different situation than what I am, but I'd like us to consider a lot about relationships this morning and where we are in those relationships, because I think that's what the Apostle Paul, you know, when Paul said in 1 Corinthians, was it 9:22-24, you know, I've become all things to all men that I might by all means save some. That implies relationships. That implies figuring out where people are and speaking to where they are, not just with some pat program that we sort of run people through. And I'm not talking to many of you have been involved, I know, in talking to others and have just as much experience as I have. But it's been fun for me the last several years. My wife and I made a decision 5 years ago that our best friends would not be non-Christian, would not be Christians, but they would be non-Christians. And so we began to pursue that, and that our best friends would not necessarily, being on the staff of the Navigators, it's easy to just spend time in your little Christian huddle with Navigator staff people, with church people, having a great time fellowshipping, being involved in all sorts of church activities. And so we decided 5 years ago that that was not going to be our realm of relationships and began to work on that basis. And it's just been in the last about a year and a half that we've begun to finally see some people meet the Lord personally and really begin to some significant changes. But it came as a result of our conscious decision to not just sit in our Christian groups, but to not to pursue, and I don't want to use the word aggressively, but just in the natural frame of things, the non-Christian would be our frame of reference and where we primarily spend our time relating. As a matter of fact, to give you an idea, I've thought it's been interesting. I travel about 60% of the time. And over the last several years, the people who will call when I'm gone on a trip are not our Christian friends, but the non-Christian friends asking what they can do to help June or babysitting or involving with people. And you know, you begin to figure out that you've got that's beginning to work when that happens. And we've been encouraged. I'm not saying that we've got everything figured out. I'm not sure anybody's got anything figured out, because evangelism is dynamic. It's never static. Relationships are dynamic. They're never static. They never stay in the same place. They're constantly moving. And so because it's in a dynamic situation, you can't just instantaneously evaluate things in a nice quantitative way, but you have to do it on a relational basis, and so that's what I thought we would talk about this morning. I don't know what your backgrounds are, and so that's what I thought I would ask you, is your name, your hometown, what particular function you're performing in the marketplace, what your sphere of contacts are, who you relate to, just anything you'd like to share, but just to help us know you better, because we're going to be working as a group, I thought we'd get to know everyone. And why don't I start right over here? I can't see your name tag.
I'm Roger Farr.
Roger, okay.
And I am now from Carrollton, Texas, north of Dallas.
Sure.
I am a chemical engineer, so I work for a chemical company in the marketplace. And my realm of contacts is really a business professional type of, usually male, but also female.
Okay. How many people do you work with directly?
I work with directly about 20 or 30. There are approximately 200 that I know by name and face within the building that I work.
Okay. How about your relationships off the job?
My relationships off the job are minimal with non-Christians.
Okay.
They're mainly the Christians we have in the church. Having just moved to the community, we're still seeking out.
Sure. Okay. Okay. How about you folks? Wendell?
I'm from Houston, and I work at the Johnson Space Center for Lockheed, working on shuttle helmets and headsets, audio, DVs, SPLs, anybody knows what that is, and send and a very small group, and I have a boss named Libby.
First or last name?
First name is Gordon.
Gordon? Yeah.
And she's a very nice boss. And I've recently become a deacon at my church this year, and I can relate pretty well to the senior adults. I think I'm feeling, starting to feel comfortable with them.
Very good. Okay.
My name is Jessica Mayer. I'm in a school of about 1,000 students, and I think our largest number is Mexican American male, and then black, and then a smaller number of whites. And I really have a pretty, as far as close relationships, I work in a pretty isolated position. I see the kids and I see other people, but primarily it's short time. That I see people. I don't see anybody over a long period of time, usually. My close relationships, I fear, are mostly after out of work. My relationships are with Christian friends. In work, I feel the responsibility of influence over all the kids that come into the clinic, and also many non-Christian teachers, counselors,
And you see them at a real point of need, too.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I think I'm glad that the Lord will use me. I think it's an opportunity to think of Him. And I try to bring Him into the Lord's, the Christian aspect. I'm trying to think of some word other than Christian to use there. But the Christian aspect into my relationship with the students and I see great need in the teachers and the counselors who are harder to reach than the students. This is a high school, which is interesting.
Very good. Okay.
My name is Gary, and I'm from Denton, Texas, which is the north of Dallas. And I'm a home health nurse, a visiting nurse. My realm of contact in the daytime is mostly the elderly population. And many of the people I work with is about 10 other skilled persons, therapists, and nurses. Outside of work, it's mostly my church community and my children.
Very good. Okay. Skip, Jane.
Jane? Jane Pro. I'm in Washington, Texas. I'm a home
Sure. It's a great one. Heavens, half the neighborhood congregates at our house in the summertime. That's how we meet everyone. Okay, Skip?
I'm Skip, and I'm self-employed in Austin. Kind of stay on the go and don't have quite as solid a group of folks that encounter all the time as some of you folks say you do. The gang brings a stream through the front door, and we kind of get around a little bit.
Very good. Okay?
My name is Mike Cunningham. I'm originally from Tyler, Texas, which is east of Dallas. Right now I'm in my third year at the University of Texas, and I'm in a fraternity down there, which Skip, by the way, does a Bible study for us every week. So I associate mostly with Christians, but there are also non-Christians that come to Tyler for the time.
You mean they're all Christians in the fraternity?
No.
Oh. Just thought I'd check.
So I associate on both levels with them. And, like I say, Skip helps us out a lot.
Very good. Okay.
My name is John Beechin. I'm originally from San Antonio, and I go to school at the University of Texas. I'm in the same fraternity as Mike. I'm one of his pledge brothers. We're mostly with, I guess it's pretty even split. Maybe 50-50 Christians, non-Christians. And there are probably 100 to 150 people in the fraternity, so that's obscure.
Okay.
My name is Ward Carr. I'm also in the same fraternity.
Well, we could just have initiation right here today.
My hometown is really Amarillo, Texas. And we're all ranch hands in the summer, so I'm wrong. Sure we deal with
wouldn't happen to be in Colorado, would it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Understand.
So we don't deal with too many people during the summer, just a bunch of cows.
Well, they probably need the Lord, too.
But we have had some very interesting and wild visitors that came up to the ranch this kid.
Oh, very good. In fact, Saturday, I was just together. We had a big reunion out at Kansas State. And for the last 15 years, fraternity and Greek people and a number of others became Christians. And we had about 128 of us together to figure out what the Lord had done in 15 years. And we had people scattered on every continent with the exception of Antarctica. And it was kind of fun to get back together again and see what the Lord's done in 15 years. So that's a... it's a good place to be involved with people, all right?
Todd, even from Fort Detectives, I was in the military there for 4 years. Your sphere of influence there was at about 40 officers or direct contact, right, in my battalion, and about 200 to 300 enlisted soldiers. I got out 3 weeks ago. I still have all those contacts, the ones that I developed relationships with there. So right now, the main sphere of influence is CNM and sports events, or some come to Bible study and some come to chapel. So it's probably more, there's not a lot of Christians down there, so it's probably more non-Christians than Christians.
Okay.
Fred Archer from San Antonio. Work for civil service engineer. And I'd say sphere of influence is about 20 or 30 people, somewhere around there. Then larger, I work in a real large building, so there's at least 300 or 400 people in there. And I have some friends, closer friends in there. And then outside of that, I guess my closest friends are in a Bible study that I go to.
Okay. Good.
I'm Mel Archambeau, and I'm originally from Connecticut, but I'm living in San Antonio now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm civil service on along the military, but I work on Brooks Air Force Base for the fire department. I'm the electronic technician for the fire department. And basically there's about 20 guys total in the fire department that I get a lot of contact with on a regular basis. It's split off because one shift is on one day and the other shift is on the other day. But I get to see them all throughout the week. I really have a bigger point of contact because it's a small base, and since I'm responsible for the fire alarm systems, there's 86 buildings which I'm responsible for. That may seem like a lot, but as time goes on, I spend more time, you know, keep on going back to the same buildings, and they get used to seeing me, and they know who I am. So that's really working out well. Off work, I would have to say, in the past, it's primarily been with my Christian friends. But over the last several months, there's been a shift. And I think it's going about 50-50. What we started doing was I got involved with softball team, which has helped a lot. And we're 12-0.
That's 12 wins and 0 losses. Okay, we want to make sure.
Actually, we're 18-0, but that's what the requirements go.
Okay.
But, and also, we started something which has really helped out a lot, is that on Friday evenings,
good. All right. Lonnie?
Mike Perkins from Oklahoma City. I work at a radio station there. This is a morning show. And it's a secular station, so my predominant sphere of influence is really with my fellow employees, most of it on here.
Sure.
Other than from the standpoint of what I don't do on the air as opposed to what I do do, which I've been surprised at how many people have commented on that. But predominantly, it's the folks at work. Outside of that, we live in a duplex, which happens to be in a cul-de-sac, and there's four families that face each other. We've really been fortunate to develop some real tight friendships there, and really been particular proposed use anymore. And we work with the senior high kids at our church, and that's been an opportunity.
Very good. That is sort of a closed society radio, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Jerry?
Jerry Kell, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. I spent around 31 years in corporate structure for Southwestern Bell Telephone. And about 2 years ago, I began to feel very strongly that God was telling us to free ourselves up. So last July, we took the plunge, not really knowing what God had in mind still. I took early retirement, certainly earlier than I planned on taking as far as my career was concerned. And found ourselves involved with rather quickly, which I guess is one thing the Lord had in mind, with business management in the church. Didn't plan on transferring that all those years of corporate management, but I guess God did. Anyway, that's where he took me for a while. And we also became financial counselors. We're very good at financial counselors.
Very good.
And our most of our ministry time is spent with singing.
Mm-hmm.
That's our thrust in the church. Our outside activities, as well as outside of that involvement, aren't as great as our activities inside seem so time-consuming. I am finding that we are beginning to be on the edge of being non-Christian for counseling, financial counseling. Most of the marketing we're beginning to see some influx. We now have enough, what we think for sure, non-Christian neighbors moving next door, so maybe God has something. That's our first neighbor we've ever had that's been within a close proximity of us in Knoxville. So,
what do? Interview people to come into the neighborhood?
Well, getting out the door, you pretty well, pretty quick determine, you know, when you go to church, when you see somebody leaving Sunday morning, you know, or Sunday, you pretty well size up pretty quickly, or with their kids, you know, running in and out, telling about their Sunday school story. It doesn't take long before you know who's on what base. But my wife, I'm still open, and I still don't know what direction, but that's pretty much where we are.
Good. Okay.
I'm Mary Ann Bell.
I bet you go with Jerry, don't you? Okay.
As he also said, we are in an unusual situation, and we talk about it a lot because up and down our street are all kinds of Christians in the apartment a lot. So we are glad to have the opportunity of a young couple moving in next door. I don't think it's going to be too easy, and it's going to take a lot of prayer, but we are looking forward to that.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay.
My close contacts have recently
Come to Colorado Springs.
So anyway, I'm really looking forward to there's a high ratio of women to men. I mean, there's a balanced group there, and I'm working on the publicity aspect in that group that reaches out to a lot of radio stations, television stations, and newspapers. So I really have not really formulated any real close relationships in the workplace or in my outside activities. My only real close relationships have been with a couple of girlfriends that I've met and also some in church.
Very good.
My name is Greg Nearbitt. I'm from Denton, Texas. And I work with the city of Denton. I took the job as a claims examiner. I was in the construction business before that. They had a position as a claims examiner. I took that job because construction was booming and I was seeing terrible things going up. I thought maybe I could be helpful because I wanted to stay in the town. I took the job. The carpet was pulled out from under construction. I got shifted into code enforcement, which is the cesspool of the city, is what everybody, nobody wants. Let's get into code enforcement. And it was only through God's grace that I was able to take that and take it with a positive attitude. And it's turned it around to where it's really encouraging. And Gloria is a friend of mine. She sees things from different aspects. We deal with a lot of the same people. They gave me an area, the southeast end, which is a black area. Mm-hmm. Person that knows nothing about what he's supposed to be doing, and they're telling me to go write citations. And my feeling is that was a community or grown. Like, this is not some place that you go write citations and get it out of there. And I've just been praying that the Lord will help to work in a way that we can help them instead of just going and trying to do something so it'll look good when they're at the new Martin Luther King Recreation Center. And Gloria's work, she sees another side of it as a home health care. She does a lot of the same homes. And we get so many stories. Everybody has an excuse of why it's not getting done. And she can go in, and I know in one home example that there was two boys were epileptic. The mother had was working, trying to keep things. The father had a stroke. And, you know, from our end, the city would just send the second warning out. We're taking to the court. And the state was trying to ask the mother to quit her job so they could put them on welfare. And, you know, you never see these ends of the things. I know she's been a little encouraged to me, and the Christian contacts I've been able to make in the city have been able to keep me there. And in the job I'm in, I've got a supervisor that has real questions. He doesn't believe in God. He thinks that if you do good, then everything will be all right. And our office is surrounded that way. But there's three people. One's in the Catholic Church, who is a Christian, but he's raised Polish and can't get out. He knows Christ, and we pray together. And the other is another girl. Goes to Baptist Church, and it's just real exciting what's happening there. And we have a lot of this to do, and we have some people that are on the other end of the earth, and I'm really encouraged to see what's going to come up. And then also within the city, I started the city jobs where you can hopefully make contacts with other people and try and get a little level. It's just a friend type thing, and hopefully somewhere working that thing in. Mm-hmm. Don't pray for me on that too, because I went and bought $800 worth of golf equipment at pennies when it's on sale for 50% half price, and only got $120 back. But I know God will take care of it, so I'm not worried.
Okay, John.
I'm John Anderson. I'm a pilot for Delta Airlines out of Dallas Fort Worth. We live in Sanger, about 60 miles north of there, 15 miles north of Denton. And as far as the sphere of influence with non-Christians, I'm stuck, you know, 3 feet from another man for 3 days at a pop. And
no, I wouldn't call that stuck. I think that'd be fun.
And I enjoy it, but rarely, if ever, have an opportunity to openly share Christ, because it's kind of a situation where it's not fair to him because he doesn't get to choose what the conversation is going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I'm trying to, you know, learn about lifestyle evangelism, that sort of thing. And the girls we have, the flight attendants we have minimum contact with, but usually it can be significant, you know, if it's done the right way, if they're treated special.
Mm-hmm.
And I get an opportunity to do that, just a little bit of. As far as friends are concerned, my close friends and the guys that I spend all my time off with, I have a lot of friends who are non-airline. We don't have any airline friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't sought them out. And friends are all committed Christians for the most part. And the ones that aren't, that I spend time with every day when I'm home, I rarely say anything to them about Christ and his visibility. And looking for vehicles or ways to confront them, not necessarily confront them, but an opportunity to share without offending them or hurting our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I am open to input. And my wife will tell you when I put out so myself short.
So will mine. So, okay.
I'm Ann Anderson, and I'm a homemaker. I'm involved in Bible Study Fellowship, so we have about 300 women, plus 300 women that are clients. And they're all in different areas of spiritual growth, so a few are non-Christian. And then I have some activities that I'm involved in where there are non-Christians, and of course, they're the neighbors.
Sure, that's right. My wife's involved in BSF. Seems like they seem to attract, at least in Colorado Springs, a number of non-Christian ladies initially. And that's always fun. That's one of the places she develops relationships. Okay, Beth?
I'm Beth Stewart, and I'm from Denton, Texas. And I work for a savings and loan and mortgage company in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
As a personnel director. So I'm kind of in a unique situation there. We have about 55 employees, and I'm responsible to recruit, hire, fire, discipline, counsel, pay them, and got a kind of a unique situation in that sphere of influence, and asked God to help me use some of the unique opportunities, especially with counseling and employee problems, to bring in biblical principles and that kind of thing. And I've had a couple opportunities to share Christ with a couple of the young men who work for us. I live in Denton, and I have a house there, and over the past few years I've had a number of young women from my church that have been with me who have all been Christians. And I guess predominantly off the workplace, I spend most of my time with sisters from
mm-hmm.
my church.
Mm-hmm.
Several of us that are here have been involved over the past year, the Andersons and several from the Bible Church, and the Evangelism Explosion program
mm-hmm.
that's been going on. And so we've had some opportunity to go out and visit during the week. Either call or type list or something to church or something like that. So that's pretty much the amount of people coming back.
Two primary questions. Whether you've been an EE, there are two questions they ask.
Yes.
Yeah, we did that in our church when I first came here and had a great time. Barbara?
Barbara McGee, also from Denton, Texas, in the Bible Church. Professionally, I'm a consultant dietitian. For the past few years, I've been in the healthcare field, primarily with the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very ripe field, if not for evangelism, for at least giving them the assurance that they do have eternal life. I was just amazed at the number of people that I talked to who were desperately afraid that they were not going to be good enough.
Yeah.
In the years that they had spent on this earth. These are people who are 80 years old and that they would not make it to heaven. And it is such joy. The next best thing to sharing Christ and seeing them pray to receive Christ is to give assurance.
That's
of
right.
Salvation. To someone, and particularly to someone who does not have very many years left on this earth. And in my church, I coordinate women's ministries,
mm-hmm.
and we are very strong on discipleship, and we work with all age groups of women.
You're busy.
So my sphere of influence, or Christian and non-Christian, I have a lot of opportunities, and I also participated in EE this past spring.
Very good. Jeff?
My name is Jeff Colbert. I'm a field engineer with the Oilfield Service Firm in Kilgore, Texas. I work with about 80 people, and that's mainly my sphere of influence with the people that I work with, and I have some people in church that I see very fairly often. We went through the 2-7 course with the navigators trying to prop up my evangelism toward others. And so far, the only person I've been able to share Christ with at work was a guy from Iran that was a former Islamic. So the 2-7 didn't prepare me for that. I couldn't really understand.
You didn't memorize your verses from the Quran?
I didn't get that. He was having a difficulty understanding how Christ could live in your heart. He feels, you know, he didn't understand. He just thinks the heart is your physical organ. But how can someone get in there? Nobody.
Well, those are good questions.
But Nicodemus had a problem with that. Different.
But I'd like to have a greater influence in the world. We have just a few Christians out there, but I see a great need. The oil field is not a real spiritual type of a place.
It's not? Oh. Okay, Mike?
I'm Mike Cornwall, and I live in Dallas, and I'm in the savings and loan business. We have about 3,000 employees statewide, and I have direct contact with, personal contact with probably about 100 of those around the state, primarily in Houston and Dallas. I spend a lot of time in Houston as well. And then through the written word, I have contact with all of them, with all 3,000 of them. But I spend a lot of time also in industry activities and trade association activities and also in political activities. So I do have a sphere of influence with other savings loan managers around the country. Mm-hmm. And then with people in Washington and Congress. In fact, Sharon and I were there last week also. We were dealing with the non-Christian element rather than the 18,000 or so Christians.
You probably had a lot more fun than I did.
I don't know about that. Conference. You ever have a lot of fun in Washington? And we spend a lot of time in the political activities in Austin as well. So we have contacts through the trade associations and through political activities. And then through our church, I'm what we call a care pastor, dealing with 5 other mini church leaders in our church. And so I have a weekly meeting in my home with those many church leaders, or some people call them shepherding flocks or whatever, and so have indirect influence through their families. And then we have a Bible study for the neighborhood for men that meets in our home on Saturday morning, so there's some influence there. So we have contact with lots of non-Christians. We don't have any trouble finding non-Christians.
Yeah. Sounds like you have your tentacles out. Hey, John?
My name is John Carter. I'm about to go to my 5th year at UT in Austin. I decided to stay another year. Didn't want to get out yet.
It's rough out there.
Yeah, kind of scared. Presently, I'm an engineer also. I'm a water engineer over in Salida, Colorado. I deal with irrigation water. God said I'm in the same fraternity, PG, PIGAM. I got a corrective. I don't think 50% of the guys in there are Christians. I'd say probably 3 or 4%. Another 47 pretend they are, you know, during Bible study, and then for the rest of the week they're back to their evil selves. And in the fraternity, you can see, just about every awful thing in the world you can imagine. My freshman and sophomore year, I was on the other side of the fence on the non-Christian side, doing all those evil things on that skip. Well, he converted me. Still haven't had a total conversion yet. I need to hurry up and get out of school. But yeah, we got a whole.
You mean conversion comes when you graduate?
It helps. But anyway, I got a. You know, a lot of my friends say, good golly, I can't believe John Carter's a convertist. That's the last guy in the world that ever did that. Well, So that gives me a good foundation to branch out and try to bring in the Bible study. You know, it's kind of hard to do, but we try.
Well, that's great. Reminds me of my own background, okay?
My name is Greg Bates. Grew up in Plano, Texas. A little town, went to Dallas. It's not that little anymore. It's getting pretty big, but I'm in the same fraternity as these guys, as you probably guessed. just graduated from University of Texas. I'm going to be taking a job here in about a month, a real job. Kind of scary, but...
Will you be still stay in Austin?
No, it's going to be in Dallas.
In Dallas?
Working in Dallas. And
major?
I was an accounting major. I'd be working for an accounting firm there. Fraternity, I don't know how to describe the fraternity. Everyone's given a little point of view on it, but I don't know that. I guess the 50-50 Christian, non-Christian is probably good. You know, everyone, most people grew up in Christian families, but a lot of times when they get off in college, you know, kind of drift. And it's been neat to, you know, have the influence of Skip over at the house. He's been a pretty strong influence on us. My sphere of influence or contacts are mainly the fraternity, a few high school friends, but kind of drifted away from them. And then hopefully, you know, looking forward to making a lot of friends at work.
Good. Well, don't give up because, let's see, of the 65 guys that were in our house as of today, we've got 47 of them in the kingdom, and about two fall every year. So don't give up after you get out of school. And,
Was it 50-50 or 397?
No. But when we started, we were total heathen.
Wine, women, and song. Sam said the six.
Well, sounds like you lived there a few days.
My name is Jerry Strader, and I'm a college professor at the junior college in Fort Worth. I live in Denton, which means I'm commuting a little every day.
Mm-hmm.
And,
sure.
Involved in an adult education program. Average age of my students is 35, and they must be gainfully employed before they come into the program. And some of the things I share in class, we have one or more personal interviews with each student each semester, one-on-one, 30 minutes to an hour, once or twice. And some of that has to do with career objectives and business. But as you pick up people who have been through a divorce, you know, if you're sensitive to needs, then you pick up on those. So after you've transacted the official business, then you can cover some unofficial business. So sphere of influence would be students in the classroom. There have been 30 or 40 of those in two different classes. That would be monitored this next semester. And contact in the business world, we make one or more co-op calls on each student at their place of business. That's usually pretty much strictly business, but there have been occasions when, again, tied to need. An hour interview winds up being an hour and a half or 2 hours. After we've covered what we need to cover officially, then I ask if they have some time, and if the line's down and they need to be back, then fine, we'll do it later. But there's still contact with the students, contact with the employers. And then I have played racquetball and tennis with six or eight or ten faculty members once or twice a week. Have a 2-7 group in my home. And I'm supposed to be teaching a Sunday school class this summer at the church. I think I have enough contact with non-Christians. I'm not sure I seize every opportunity. I compare that somewhat to pheasant hunting and quail hunting and goose hunting and duck hunting and some other things that I spend some time in. And my wife and I can drive down the same road at the same time, and I see these things as they occur, and she never sees them. And I think part of the reason that I see them is because I spend 12 weekends or so out of the year looking for them. And so I see them the other 10 months out of the year. And I think some of that applies to evangelism, what we're sensitized to.
That's right. Yeah, I would agree. That's a lot of it. Is you listen, you know, you think, well, why do we take all this time and share about what all we do? Well, there are several things that usually come through. And as I listened this morning, one is multiplicity of situations. The other thing is, but yet there's a commonality. I listened to a balance, you know, Christian versus non-Christian. How do we do that? Relationships that we have with non-Christians, how do we turn them over to a spiritual note, particularly in your situation? I mean, not an easy one. There are just any number of common threads that run through a group like this. I would say in my own life, I've come through three or four phases. If I would evaluate it, and I certainly am no expert, I became a Christian when I was in college, when I was a junior in a fraternity, just about like these guys. And at that point, back in the late 60s, early 70s, doing evangelism on a college campus was like shooting ducks in a barrel. We learned how to present the bridge illustration, the four spiritual laws, and we had 30 fellows come to know Christ in the next year. But then you move into a business situation, and you share Christ with everybody around you, and then in the first 2 weeks, and then you say, well, what do I do now? And you have to live with the implications of that for the next 4 or 5 years. And then you move into a situation, you get a little further in life, and relationships become a little more complicated. And they're not as easy for my wife and I now, because the further along you go, the more complicated life becomes, because the more relationships you have, the more people you know. And so life goes through phases as we're attempting to share the Lord. I think, let me just pass out something. If I could ask, let's see, Jeff, could I ask you? And Lonnie, could I ask you? I'd like to just bring up something that has really helped me in determining where people are in their relationship with the Lord. Now, this is not original with me. It's not original with the Navigators. It's not original with a number of people. Do I have enough copies for everybody? Some of you maybe have seen this before. And what this is a study that was done by a sociologist and marketing professor at Wheaton College, who was commissioned by the Billy Graham Association to figure out where people are and how they become Christians. And his name was Dr. Jim Ingle. And maybe some of you have read his book. It's called What's Gone Wrong with the Harvest. And normally I don't read books about evangelism, because people that write books about evangelism usually don't do it. I mean, I hate to say that, but they're dealing in areas of theory. But this is one place where a piece of theory really helped me in my own practical experience as to figure out where people are in their spiritual pilgrimage. God has every individual, I believe, on the face of the earth at some place, either moving toward a relationship with Him, they haven't established it yet, or moving closer in their relationship with Him after they have met Him initially. What's Gone Wrong with the Harvest? And it was published back in the late 70s, about 78 or 79. I think Tyndall published it. But God has people involved in this process as they go through life. And the thing that helped me about this was this little scale that he came up with. And he started at a minus 8, a minus 7, minus 6, minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2. Almost sounds like Houston, doesn't it? The countdown here. Minus 1, you know, and 0. But what Ingalls tried to do was he tried to identify where people are in their own relationship with the Lord. And he did a fairly good job of it. Starting at a minus 8 would be a person who has an idea of a supreme being, or at least is considered it. The book of Ecclesiastes says that God's put eternity into every man's mind. And so it's there. And have you ever met anyone who has not considered the possibility that there isn't a supreme being ever in your entire life? I mean, I don't know whether you've done any surveys. Have you ever met anybody like that? You know, I don't think I have either. I've talked to people who profess to be atheists, and I have never met a true atheist. By definition, an atheist has never considered the fact that there's a supreme being, has never decided that there wasn't one. Most of them are agnostics. They have considered the fact and make the decision and said, no, there can't be one. But I've never met a person, either here, overseas, or anywhere, who has not at least considered the fact of a supreme being. And God's just built that into every person's psyche, being, or whatever you call it. God has just has built that deep down inside. And I think it's interesting, as I do a lot of traveling, just to listen how people communicate, even non-Christians. One night I was going into Atlanta, and I wasn't on Delta. It was another airline, but we were involved in a near miss. And there was a lady sitting out on the window, and I was sitting on the aisle. And the wing came up like this, and it came back down, and this lady looked out the window, and she says, oh my God, there's an airplane out there. And now, you think about that, and you think, well, it's kind of funny, and, she's just using a curse, but it's not. See, what did she refer to? Even in the midst, the first thing that came to her mind, oh my God, there's an airplane out there. And so, deep down in a person's psyche, there's at least that recognition. They may make light of it. They may make all sorts of the brunt of jokes, us being even brunt of jokes. But at least God has put that into every person's heart. Well, then, God begins to work in a person's life, given that presupposition. And that's where proclamation, where we come in. There's an initial awareness. Once you figure out and accept the fact that there's a supreme being, then you begin to get some facts on what that God is like, what that person is like, what God expects of mankind. What are some of the expectations that God has of us as human beings? And so there's an initial awareness of who God is. And many times I find, as I relate to people, that God uses us to demonstrate that to other people as to what God is like. I mean, what is God like? Well, He's holy, for one thing. He holds us accountable. For another thing, but yet you balance that, it's a dynamic tension with God is a loving God. You know, I was with an employee who was a non-Christian, and I began to ask him, what do you think about God? And he said, well, I think he's kind of like my manager. He said, I know the guy really likes me, and yet he gets on my case, you know, when I blow it on the job. And I thought, now that's interesting that he would relate that to a manager or to someone that's in direct authority over him. And so God uses authority structures many times. I think we as Christians are involved in authority structures to begin to manifest what God's like. Now, it doesn't take just life, it takes a little lip. So, pretty soon people begin to figure out, number one, that, you know, there are some implications to that. And so what are some of the implications? Well, for one thing, man is sinful. And for a while, I had a little survey going. I would ask people, I'd say, well, do you think men and women are inherently good or bad? And I'd take a little poll. And I think I found one or two who thought they hadn't sinned, out of a number of people that I talked to. But basically everybody pretty much agreed the fact that man was sinful or that they just really weren't very inherently good. And so you begin to move down this scale in terms of some knowledge. And God uses us to do that. Then there's a grasp of some of the implications. Now, if man is sinful and God is not sinful, in other words, God has never sinned, never will, and God sets the ultimate standard, and here's God. In order to be like God, you've got to be sinless. But here's man who has a problem, that he's sinned, and therefore he's not in God's league. How do you rectify that problem? So you begin to move down a little further on the scale, so a grasp of some of the implications of the gospel. Then you begin to see some people who have sort of a positive inclination toward that. Let me give you an example. For the last 5 years, every Saturday morning, I've had breakfast with a group of guys here in town. Our common tie is we're all ham radio operators. One is a college professor who comes from a Mormon background. Another one is a gynecologist who does laser surgery in the reproductive area, has pioneered some things in that. But there are a total of, it'll go from about 6 to 10 men. We have breakfast every Saturday morning. Now, the only ground rule for that breakfast is you can't pick where breakfast is going to be until Friday night. And everybody, finally, the poor guy that picks breakfast, the breakfast place is the scapegoat the next morning, because we always see how bad the place is that he picked. And so there's everything from politics to finances to business. Everything is transacted in this little group of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 guys that show up. It's a real social phenomenon to be involved in. One of them, the gynecologist, I would say, honestly, as I evaluated, was about right over here when we started 5 years ago. If I were to evaluate it today, I would say he's about right down here. Because as we've interacted over the years, I've had lunch, I've had no agenda with him other than the fact to get to know him where he is. And so we had a little activity here at Glen Eyrie that really helped that, and I'll talk about what we did a little later, to get us over on a springboard for spiritual discussion. But I've been at that guy now 5 years to get him that far. And I'm convinced that he'll become a Christian. I really am. It's just a matter of time. It is just a matter of time. Down here about a -4 or -3, there's a recognition of Christ. That Christ is the one who solves this problem between God and man. And Christ can also reconcile people, reconcile relationships. And that Christ lives in every believer. Now, you know, that's pretty basic doctrine for us, but for most non-Christians, that's a pretty hard concept to grasp. And sooner or later, people begin to get enough information to the place where they can make a decision to either say yes and go on, or no and come back here and get in what I call a vicious circle. They have enough information, they know what the implications are, but they say no, and therefore they stay in this circle. And I've got friends from 15 years ago who are still in that circle. And we'll talk about it. I have one college professor. In fact, I called him last weekend. I've done everything but stand him in a corner and beat on him to make a decision to be a Christian. Not in an offensive way, but we've known each other for 15 years. And he's constantly in this circle. Well, if I do, I'll lose. I'm not sure I'll have credibility. I won't be able to do the things. There's any number of things, but he just doesn't make that decision. He's in a vicious circle. And he's been there for about the last 3.5 years. And if they say yes, then they begin to grow in their relationship with the Lord. And we begin to have quiet time with them, develop them in their devotional life, but just to get to know the Lord better after they have initially been introduced. So this has really begun to help me over the last several years begin to figure out where people are. And if you listen to a person long enough, in a social situation or even a personal situation, they'll pretty much tell you over a period of time exactly where they are. And it's been amazing to be able to fit people in to this chart. All you have to do is ask some questions. In this Saturday morning breakfast group, one Saturday morning, it just comes out of nowhere. One of the guys had purchased a $25,000 insurance policy that would enable him to be frozen after he dies if he has a particular disease, and he can be woken back up. What is it, 100 years later? I don't know. What's it called? Cryogenics? I have no idea what it's called.
Right.
Is that right? But a $25,000 policy. And he makes a comment. He said, I don't know of any other way, you know, to ever try to come back to life. And I said, well, I do. And that precipitated with three of them. Well, yeah, but that precipitated a discussion, you know, that lasted about 3 months with several of those men and still going on. It was a tremendous opener. It took a couple of years to get to that place. But it's kind of interesting to notice, you know, as people talk, they think, they're wrestling with things, and you listen long enough, and sooner or later they'll tell you pretty much where they are. But we need to have the time to be able to relate to them to figure out where they are. I think so many times in Christian circles, we make the assumption that a person is about right here. If you take the bridge illustration or the four spiritual laws, those illustrations make a lot of assumptions. They make the assumption, number one, that the person has a basic concept of who God is. Number two, that they have a basic concept of who Jesus Christ is. Number three, that you also make the assumption that God's been working in their life to the place where they can make a decision down here fairly quickly. But I don't know about you, but as I've observed with people over the last several years, they're moving this way instead of moving that way. And they're moving this way at a tremendous pace. Because the things that used to be accepted norm in society are no longer accepted norm. I mean, just look at the marriage structure in your own community and what's happening. You know, I grew up in Kansas. The fact that anyone would ever get a divorce or consider anything like that was unthinkable in the 50s and 60s, and today it's commonplace. But the basic moral values that were the underpinnings that put people in this arena here are eroding, and it's gradually coming back here. I don't think I've ever met what I'd call a true secular person. You hear a lot of people talk about secularized people. I don't think I've met one yet. I'm looking, and I may meet one the next 5 or 10 years. I've met them in Latin America, but I haven't met them here in the U.S. So, just to give you a little idea, there are some things that have begun to help me. Now, with that in mind, yes. I would define a secularized person as someone who is back about right here, a basic awareness of deity, and not much else.
Okay. What's the reason that you haven't
found? Well, in Brazil, I've talked with a spiritist. I've talked with other people. I've talked with a voodoo. I'll take it back. About the closest thing I ever met was a fellow in New Orleans one time. And I have a little experiment. You have a lot of people who are talking about the secularized people in America and how America is becoming secularized. What they're really saying is that America is moving backwards like this. That's what they're really saying. But a true secularized person is someone who really has no concepts other than just right in this arena in here. And I have met really what I'd consider an honest one in America. Yeah, but Shirley MacLaine has a lot more there. I mean, I've read her book. She's flaky. That's Shirley MacLaine's biggest problem, but Shirley MacLaine hasn't sat down and really thought about what she's saying. She has a lot more ingredients in here. I mean, she even talks about Christ. So she has some concepts.
Would secular generally be defined today as people not proclaiming Christ? Is that what we're looking at? That's what I see the definition being used as, is people that aren't proclaiming the Father of Christ. They're not letting that be the master, and they don't care, so they're going to follow something else. They have other gods besides.
Oh, it could be. I don't think I would view it as that as much as where a person basically is in their view of life on a spiritual basis. Yeah.
Like 3 years ago, what I was, I would consider myself either an atheist or what number 8 was.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, basically hearing people say there's a spiritual being but never believing it.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you, where would you put that?
Did you have some facts? I mean, did you, had you talked to people about, did you know any Christians?
I avoided them.
Okay. Well, so did I before I became a Christian. But I knew why I was avoiding them.
Well, I said my preference in avoiding them was more of a judgment against them.
Okay.
And, you know, thinking they were very weak people and couldn't intellectually stand on their own.
Good.
So, I mean, but...
Where would you put yourself on a scale like this?
8 or back.
8 or back? Don't think you can go much further than 8.
She was a minus 10.
I'll take it back. I just met one.
I'm not saying that that's, you know, rebellion. It's just that I know that a lot of people that were my friends in St. Louis before I came to know the Lord, a lot of people around us had the same views that I had in that area. And maybe it was more because we didn't really explore the spiritual dimension, so to speak. Mm-hmm. We really thought more in other areas.
You know, St. Louis is an interesting place. It really... No, I don't mean it negatively. It's an intensely Catholic town. And while there's a spiritual overtone there, I have friends in St. Louis, It's one of the easiest places in the world to get people into Bible studies, particularly Catholics.
Yeah, I had been transferred there with my work.
Sure.
So I didn't really know that background. The people I ran with was pretty much a yuppie crowd that all were in the same.
See, I think one of the problems, though, is not so much information. It's what you mentioned is called rebellion. To rebel against it.
Victory. I mean, just wanting to make yourself more of a god than even kind of contemplate your thought of their own.
Good point, though.
But I think a lot of people in today's society, especially with more and more of the drive and ambition to climb, to succeed, and more of that, a lot of this kind of that awareness segment, so to speak, is never even discussed.
That's right.
Much as what you're gaining at the expense of other people. You know, so maybe it is stuffed or hidden in the back of your mind, but, you know, I would say that you're right saying it's regressed that, but I would also really reevaluate the statement that there aren't people at that 8 or behind category.
Okay. I'll be happy to. But I mean, when you go overseas, and I've met some really secular, what I consider to be secular people who have never heard about Jesus Christ. I mean, they have never even zeroed in on the concept of it. They never even heard the name, literally almost, of Jesus Christ. Now, though, I would consider those to be real secularized people. America still has quite a Protestant underpinning, whether we accept it or not. Now, it's moving away, and I'd agree. It's moving quickly. We're losing it. But
a number of years ago, but I ran into a couple, one south of Fresno, on a college campus doing some survey. The question I asked was, of course, you're interested in the issue, who was Jesus Christ? He said, I really didn't know. I said, what do you think? He said, I really don't know. I said, have you heard anything from mom and dad?
Nope.
Not that I remember.
Well, now, see, that that would be one I would consider.
The other one was in Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
Okay, so I heard it, but it never gave a serious contemplation or any kind of justification. Mm-hmm. So, in that definition, I can see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But as far as an actual thought that it was true, it never occurred to me.
Yeah. Rejection. I mean, most of the people that you run into these days, I mean, a lot of the people have rejected and have accepted something else in five places. In other words, we have a lot of people of other religions in the United States.
As a matter of fact, in Detroit, 10 miles south of Detroit, there's a brand new mosque that's been built. Detroit has the largest singular concentration of Muslims outside the Middle East. And they're aggressive in evangelism. Their form of evangelism. So I think you're right. Let me get to another thing here. As a result, I just wanted to share this. How many of you have seen that before? Have any of you aware of this? Some of you have. But it really helped me begin to identify where people are. What I'd like us to do for the next, next 20 minutes, could someone just open up the windows on the back? I don't know about you, but it's getting hot in here. We got air conditioning? Great. If we didn't get something going in here, I was going to test the outer envelope of my antiperspirant.
Have our permission to remove your
coat
if you like.
Oh, I'll be happy to.
We're going to take a break.
At 10:30? This is our break, Mike. For the next about 20 minutes, you can get a cup of coffee if you want to. You can walk outside. You can think about it. But what I'd like you to do is with this little... This is a little thing that I use from time to time that helps June and I. And there's nothing profound about it, but it's just non-Christians with whom I have a relationship. Have you ever sat down and actually evaluated who you know, who you'd consider to be a person who doesn't have a personal relationship with Christ, and then ask yourself, what's the relationship based upon? What is it based upon? In my case, with that little illustration of breakfast, I mean, it would be a breakfast group of people. That would be one thing that a relationship would be based upon. It might be based upon work. It might be based upon any number of things. But what are the basic ingredients of that relationship? Then the next column over, how can I deepen this relationship? And the last one is, what can I do to bring this relationship on a spiritual note? When we began to say that our best friends were going to be non-Christians, there are some things that I made a little checklist and some helps that have helped me over the last several years with people. And this is a little thing that I have on my desk at home. Hints on building relationships with people. Number one is to meet the person. Always keep your eyes open for individuals. We tend to think of groups of people in Christianity, I think. We think of hundreds on Sunday morning. If you're in a college ministry, which some of you are, you tend to think of groups of people with the navigators. People have been involved in the navigator ministry. They think of apartment complexes, but they don't think of individuals. They think of groups of people instead of thinking of individuals. You think about our company. Reaching our company for Christ. I hear a lot of business people talk about that, particularly who in positions of management or leadership, about winning our company for Christ. How can we do that? Well, the problem with that is you think of groups instead of individuals. And so how do you win your company for Christ, or how are you involved with your community for Christ? In our community, it's one by one. That's how God does it, is one by one. And yet, mentally, we are fixated on groups of people. Bible study groups. That seems to be, as I get with Christians, it's one of the sort of our mindsets. So keep your eyes open for individuals, not groups of people. Secondly, when I leave a person I've met, I try to set up some way to meet with them again. Particularly if it's somebody you just kind of click with. It might be around what a person's interests are. It might be leaving a person with a positive experience the first time you meet them. Try to give them a positive experience. And one of the best ways you can give a person a positive experience is what I think you mentioned, Jessica, is it?
Yes.
Is listening to people. That leaves them with a positive experience, because how many people listen to other people? Very, very few. Everybody's always trying to tell you which clubs they belong to, what this, and how important they are in life, instead of listening to what, where they are. And particularly among business people, I love to listen to them because they're always selling themselves. It's called merchandising. I mean, it's really interesting to listen to what we communicate about. Have you ever sat in a restaurant? I remember sitting in Chili's in Richardson one time. And I was having lunch alone, and all I did was just sat in there listening to what people were talking about. And nobody was listening to anybody else. Everybody had their transmitter on. They never shifted and received. Yeah, it was a real social phenomenon to watch. How do you listen to people? Offer help to them with something the next time you get together. But we're so busy with Christian activities a lot of times, we just don't have any time to be with people. You ever notice that? For me, I've resigned off of all of the committees at church. Not because I don't like committees at church. It's because I choose to spend that time with people who are not necessarily the Christian persuasion. So I've gotten off. And the way I've gotten around it is people will come to me and say, well, you ought to serve on this committee. I say, well, no, but I'll be happy to work with somebody who can serve on the committee. See, I'm in the people development business, and I'll be happy to develop somebody to be out, sit on the elder board. And by the way, if you get somebody to memorize 5 verses of Scripture, have a devotional life every day, and talk to somebody else about their faith in Christ, you have a spiritual giant on your hands. No, seriously. So, my goal is to raise up people to sit on those church boards. And on committees. Those are important. But I've chosen for a period of time not to do that, because it's time It's always prime time for non-Christians. How many times have you ever stayed home on Sunday morning when your neighbor's mowing the lawn and just gone out and talked? It totally shocked our neighbor one time. He said, "Well, why aren't you at church?" And now, you know what that told me? Is that he had a preconceived idea of what a Christian was. He went to a building. And that's about all he had in his mind as to what a Christian was.
What was your answer?
I said, "Well, don't necessarily have to go because it's not a social club." Left it at that. It's not a social club. Just left it at that. And that's the way I got to know him. Have you ever stayed home from church on Sunday morning? I mean, I'm not promoting heresy here. I'm not anti-church. I'm just simply saying, you know, you need to free up some time. Number three, I'd recommend a good Bible study on your own about the lifestyle standards of a Christian. Now, make up your mind before you get involved with non-Christians what you will and will not do, okay? Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there ham-boning, you know, in a relationship, trying to figure out on the spur of the moment whether you're going to do this, do that. I'm not going to speak to any specific issues. We're not going to get into that today. We could. That's a whole different topic. But what is a biblical lifestyle? Have you ever looked in the Scriptures? I mean, just to make one thing, I think a lot of do's and don'ts we have in Protestant Christianity, I don't find in the Bible. And that's one of the reasons we turn non-Christians off. We need to realize what is a biblical lifestyle. Ask yourself, for me personally, in the light of Romans 14, what are my convictions of a biblical lifestyle? Number four, try to make spiritual inroads. The second time you meet the person, I'd change that now. After 5 years, I'd say try to make spiritual inroads as opportunity avails itself. And don't be ashamed to do it. You know, the non-Christian does not have any answers. I've come to that conclusion. I'm only 37 years old, but I've lived long enough to realize that the people who are non-Christians, who I thought had answers to life, don't. They don't. Just believe it. Take it by faith. They don't. Five, make many short, frequent contacts with a person. I find that short, frequent contacts are better than spending a whole day with somebody. And the telephone, I'm glad God invented the telephone. Because, just a five-minute phone call. Just call somebody, "Hey, how are you doing? Wondered how things were going. I called a guy the other day. His picture was in the paper. He's a friend of mine, non-Christian. Called him up and said, "Hey, glad to see you're finally climbing up the social ladder." And clipped it out, sent him this little thing, you know. And we're to the place where we can joke with each other. And he said, "Well, I didn't think holy men talked that way." But that's the kind of relationship we have. We have fun with each other. And I do everything to make sure that people don't put me on a spiritual, holy platform. And it's particularly when you work for a Christian organization, it's really bad. Because they ever find out what you do, I mean, you're dead. I'm an economist now in administration. That's the way I introduce myself. You know, and if they ask a little more, I give them a little more. But I don't go any further than that.
I heard a minister say, he always says, "I'm in the marketing business."
Well, that's good. He is. He gives his product away.
How do you limit your phone calls? I have a hard time getting off the phone. I'm scared to answer it a lot of times. I'm not scared. I just know that I'm not going to be able to hang up because there's a lot of people that call me and want to talk.
You know, I went and took a little course called telephone management because I had the same problem. You get on the phone, you're on there for an hour.
Yeah.
And they say goodbye 8 times. And
that's right. And one thing I learned is you can set an agenda at the beginning of a phone call if you just say, you know, "I'm in the middle of a meeting, I got just a few minutes," or "I'm in the middle of something," or "could you call back?" You can do it. But if you set the agenda right up front and you just don't kind of let it evolve, that's what's helped me, is to set the agenda on a telephone call right up front. Simple little thing.
Without lying, right?
Yeah, I spent $150 to go to it and you got it for free.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
There is a little more detail, so that's pretty good.
During the first meeting, strive to keep the door open for a second time together. Second time, you know, I begin to pray for people. And relationships, I find, in my case, either click or they don't click. You know, sometimes you click with people, sometimes you don't. So why try to click with people you don't click? I mean, God does have other people out there to click with. And the folks that I really do, well, I spend some time with them just to see how the relationship's going to develop. That's the same thing you do in business. I was with a bank president the other day. I said, well, who do you have lunch with, your best clients? He said, oh, not always. He said, I'm always out prospecting. He said, and the ones I click with, I usually get their account. I thought, well, if it works in business, probably works in the spiritual realm. Number three, talk about get a person into the home or apartment. Number four, get together with a person six or seven times before I begin thinking of limiting contact with them. Again, I'm not sure I'm so hepped on that now. This is a few years later as I think about it. And, you know, if there's chemistry and it works, pursue it. Now, on the next page is something I'm almost ashamed to put in there, but when I first began to do this, one of the things that I found out is if I didn't plan on planning time with non-Christian people God brought along my path, I'd never do it. I'd just naturally gravitate away from it. And so I put a little checklist, and this sounds very legalistic. I know it looks legalistic, but it helped me get into a mindset. The first two or three people that I began to just relate to, non-Christians, I just had a little checklist of things I was going to try with them. And so I won't go any further than that, other than just to show you that this is one way that I began to get myself into a mindset. And the other thing is that's really helped me is to get myself out of the mindset that I'm going to put a notch on my Bible, that I'm going out after people to win them to Christ. Yes, I am, but I want to have their genuine interests at heart. Because people can pick up when you have a hidden agenda. I mean, men can they pick up when they have a hidden agenda. When I have a salesperson come into my office, I immediately know if they have a hidden agenda. You know, I 15 seconds, five words out of their mouth, and I know if they have a hidden agenda. Don't have hidden agendas with people.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, can somebody describe, I mean, do you know what I'm talking about? Can somebody describe a hidden agenda? Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'll have this relationship with you, but secretly we're going to get you in the kingdom. They're a project, yeah. That's right.
I have a fellow that calls me on the phone, and he goes over three or four things, and then sooner or later he gets to that, oh, by the way.
And it's the oh, by the way. Is
when it comes in.
That's right. Don't have spiritual agendas. Let me give you some scriptures to look at that might stimulate you in thinking about dealing with non-Christians. Yes?
Can I share some on that that really helped bring me up? Because I was always, you know, in getting with people doing that hidden agenda thing, and always trying to think, okay, when should I bring up the gospel? How should I do it? It didn't work this time. It's just always a little whisper in the back of my mind. And someone told me to share Christ's love. Gospel is part of that love. But if I focus on just loving the person, that really helped free me up.
Yeah.
Because obviously I really am getting together with that person to lead the Lord. I mean, that really is my motivation.
Right.
But
after all, we do have a great commission.
Yeah. And that is part of it. But focusing on just loving them and meeting them where they're at, meeting their needs, really helped give me a new direction.
Yeah, just be interested in them as a person. Really love them for who they are.
There's a little song that I heard that's, and I'm sure a lot of you probably heard, but it's letting Christ shine through you because you're the only Christ a lot of people ever see. And with that mindset, it helps you look at somebody else. And if you're walking with that, knowing that there's somebody there that doesn't believe, that you may be the only one that they ever see. And you don't know that. It's not human sight, but you know, your responsibility is to convince yourself that way.
Well, the commandments don't say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength, and lead you to make you Christ.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Love's infectious. It really is. Acts 17. I'd commend that to you to really study. It's Paul at Athens. He's dealing with religious people. Very religious people. In fact, they were so religious they even had a monument to the unknown God to cover themselves just in case they didn't happen to, they missed one. Put yourself in Paul's situation and read through Acts 17. I'd highly commend that to you. The other example I'd highly commend to you is in John chapter 4, Jesus dealing with the Samaritan woman at the well, how Jesus dealt with her and dealt with peripheral issues. For instance, she brought up the, well, what about the lost in Africa issue? It's dealt. Jesus dealt with that. Only she just said, well, our fathers say we should, you know, you say you need to worship one place, we say we can worship another. What about that? It was kind of like the heathen in Africa issue, and Jesus dealt with it. Go through there and look at the issues that Jesus dealt with in John chapter 4, and the issues of how Paul dealt with secular people in Acts chapter 17. And I'd commend that little personal Bible study to you to do it. Just your own. Go down through, read it. Try to imagine you're putting yourself into either Jesus or Paul's situation. And saying, well, now how did they handle that? And how does that translate to my situation? To do a personal Bible study on your own in either John 4 or Acts 17. They're excellent in how Jesus and Paul dealt with people in situations that we deal with daily.
The contrast is also in John 3 of religious people.
Uh-huh.
Between John 3 and John 4.
That's right.
And there are some differences.
There are. Now, I won't go through this morning. I didn't know whether we'd get to it or not. I want to make sure that we had plenty of time to talk among ourselves. But in case you'd like to take one of these with you, I'll leave them up here. One of the things that I've found in getting people these days into a spiritual mode is that after I have a relationship with people, I will invite them, and this is the way it usually goes. Because I deal with business people, I usually say, you know, we're inviting a very select group of people into a little discussion group. And what we're doing is we're going to study the Bible and how it relates to basic human nature. Now, that may kind of sound surprising, I mean, you know, that we'd study the Bible. But I found it to address some basic issues. And I've also found that a lot of people have some real questions about it, some deep-seated questions that they may really have wondered about for a number of years. And so we're getting together just a select group, and as a couple of us were sitting down, your name came to mind, and we thought we'd invite you. And after I have a relationship, I've had very few people ever turn me down. And what I ask them to do is to spend 4 weeks with us studying the Bible. And I even bring Bibles along. And what we do is we study John chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if they really like it, we go into Jesus at the Jewish jacuzzi in John 5, the bubbling pool of Bethesda. And we can continue on, but they're only committed to 4 weeks. That's all they're committed to. And in here, what's basically, I've put down some things on how to get a group started, some group dynamics involved in it, and you've even got the questions for John 1. They're all written out. I'll let you do John 2, 3, and 4 on your own. But I think you'll get the gist of it as you go through here. And a number of us have tried this little format, either with couples in a home, or it can be business people in a restaurant setting. We've done that. We've done any number of things, but I've found it to be a good little tool. Now, maybe some of you have done that, but I've found this to probably be the best tool to expose people to the Scriptures. And the important thing is don't preach at people. Just let them examine the Scriptures on their own. And it sure raises a lot of questions. I started doing this, actually I got started in Chicago when I was in business. I would invite them to study the book of Proverbs, and we'd start with Proverbs 1, 2, 3, and 4. King Solomon had a management problem. He was worth about $14 trillion, as near as I could figure out on the computer. And he had a problem on how to manage men and money. And so we'd invite them to study the book of Proverbs with us for 4 weeks. And then if they liked it, we'd go into a John study and talk about the real concepts behind the Bible. And we'd go for another 4 weeks. And we found that a number of them would meet the Lord about the time if they continue on about John 8 or John 9, it's when they really begin to ask some real questions. But it's a good little springboard. Let me give you another idea, just for consideration. A number of us here in Colorado Springs had a number of non-Christian contacts. And in your community, you might sit down with a team of people and begin to pool your Christian resources. That's what we did. We invited people and printed business-style invitations this spring to a five-part seminar on Christian leadership. How to do more when your best is not enough. And what we did is we invited them out here to the Glen for breakfast, and we met at 6:15 in the morning. And the ground rules were to be that it was to be non-Christians. And now we had a resource that a lot of people don't have, but we had Lorne Sanney talk on biblical view of leadership. He one morning used the example of Jethro and Moses. Jethro was Moses' father-in-law, and Moses was trying to judge all these people, thousands of people. So Jethro, his father-in-law, comes along and said, now you need to appoint judges of 10, judges of 100, judges of 1,000. It was delegation. So we spent a whole morning on delegation. And it became quite a phenomenon. It was fun to see 25 or 30 non-Christians sitting there taking notes as fast as they could take notes. Now the Bible speaks to practical business issues. In fact, it got to be by the fifth time that the non-Christians were inviting people, and we quit inviting. And to stand in the parking lot with a guy, and I won't use all the words because you might be offended, was I thought this was going to be a blankety-blank church service. And I was really encouraged that, you know, the Bible really isn't a blankety-blank book. That's the type of reception we got. And let me just encourage you to be creative, to do some things, because the Bible speaks to some very practical issues, and you may have people in your community who can speak to very practical issues.